It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 115 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
It's been a very exciting week for X-Wing. So much X-Wing news right now. We had the announcement of second edition early last week, right before the start of the 2018 World Championships. And then we had the World Championships, three qualifying days, followed by a final day. And now we have a new world champion.
Yeah, big congratulations to Simeon Delapina, our new world champion. And of course, he gets extra props for winning it with Scum and Villainy, the best faction.
Yeah, huge congratulations to Simeon. He did a fantastic job taking that Scum and Villainy list all the way to the final table. In today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about his list, about the archetypes we saw in the top 16, and whether or not our predictions were accurate. They mostly were, with some pretty notable exceptions. And we're also going to talk a little bit about my experience playing at the World Championship.
So let's get right to it. All right, Tim, you are our representative at the World Championship, and you didn't let us down, didn't do too shabby. Made it to day two, and we're even in fighting distance of the cut.
Yeah, it was a tough, stressful couple days of flying there. I had my qualifying day on day 1C. That was on the Friday there, May the 4th, Star Wars Day. Great day to play X-Wing. I only went 4-2, which qualified me for day two, but it meant I had a pretty rough battle if I wanted to even vie for top 32, let alone top 16. But I had pretty strong margin of victory with that 4-2 record. So if I wanted to get up there into that top 32, top 16, I really needed to do very well in my day two cut. In day two, we had three more rounds of Swiss, where I had to play pretty much the gauntlet of all the toughest rebel lists you can face in the X-Wing game right now.
Right, and starting out at only 4-2, that means you can't lose any of these if you want a chance at the cut. And you can't just win them all. You have to win them pretty well, because you still need pretty good MOV even at 7-2 to make it into the cut.
Yeah, so my focus was not only on trying to win these games, which at, you know, the world championship level, especially day two, that's already a hard enough goal. It's trying to hold on to as much MOV as possible. My first matchup was against a Nim Miranda list, of course, which is utterly terrifying for me, who's flying Quick Draw Inquisitor and a new squadron pilot. Those trajectory simulator bombs can just wreck an Inquisitor, and that bomblet generator on Miranda means I can't really get my Inquisitor behind Miranda, because the threat of that bomblet is so terrifying that you have to, you know, really try and keep your distance and be very careful. Thankfully, I got a break early on in that game where the Nim had to break off from the Miranda, so that gave me an opportunity to really focus in on the Miranda with my Quick Draw and Inquisitor, and thankfully was able to break through her shields and hull and take her off the board. And then it was still pretty scary with that Nim having those trajectory simulator bombs, but I was able to split up my forces and focus in on the Nim, have to absorb a harpoon missile on my Quick Draw, but was able to reciprocate with another harpoon missile right back there, and was able to take that game only losing the new. So huge shout out to Luke Carrington there. He did a fantastic job. I had a couple lucky breaks there that enabled me to take that one.
Yeah, and then up next, I mean, you face a tough list, but it's actually a pretty good matchup for you. The Lothal Rebel with Fenn Rau and Zeb docked in the Lothal Rebel.
Yeah, this is a pretty tough matchup for most X-Wing lists. The four twin laser turret volleys that you're getting from that Lothal Rebel, thanks to that dock shuttle and the ghost title, is pretty terrifying, especially for my Quick Draw, who is super susceptible to twin laser turret. You lose a lot of hit points really fast, especially if you got, you know, 4 3-dice shots coming at you. Thankfully, I have teched my list a little bit to deal with this. The sensor jammer on the Lothal is typically pretty annoying, turning your hit results into focuses, but thankfully I have expertise on Quick Draw, so I basically, as long as I'm not stressed, get to ignore that effect. I also have a proton rocket on my Inquisitor, which is really good at pushing damage through really fast against the zero agility ghost. This matchup actually kind of went the way I would hope this matchup to go, where I'm going to lose some ships just because that build just puts out so much damage. So basically, I was put in a position where I had to get as many shots as I could as quickly as I could, and was able to trade my Quick Draw for the Lothal Rebel, which means I have a full-up Inquisitor and a mostly full new squadron to finish off the partially damaged Zeb and the Fenn Rau.
I mean, those ships, both those Phantoms, when they're on their own, just don't really compare to the Inquisitor or a Alpha-class Starwing.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you've got the pilot skill advantage on Fenn, but my pilot skill 8 Inquisitor, with all that action economy, auto thrusters, and the focus evade target lock on pretty much every turn, means I'm going to be able to tank some primary weapon shots from it and deal out a fair bit of damage. Huge shout out to Dawei Chua, though, who flew that list. He did it pretty much perfectly. I just got some, you know, high-end damage on the front there, so I was able to break through that defense and take that ghost off the board, which is really the whole of my strategy. If I can't trade my quick draw for that ghost, then I'm probably going to lose that matchup. So those first two games on day two were really tough, but things got really hard when I went into that final Swiss round.
Well, this is World. You should be facing the best of the best, and you got to face our Minnesota regional champion and Chicago System Open champion, Will Haywood.
Yeah, this is about the worst final Swiss round matchup you can get. Not that Will's not a great guy. Will's an awesome guy. I actually got to do some commentary on the Gold Squadron podcast live stream with him, and that was super enjoyable. Will's awesome, but he's also a really good X-Wing player, and he's flying that Rebel regen bunker with Miranda, Donnie, Lorik, and the Stress Ezra, and he flies it about as well as anyone can.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about these Rebel regen bunker lists a lot. Will's one of those that brought the list to popularity. You got the durable Miranda Donnie with C-3PO adding extra evade results, Lorik adding an extra evade result with that pilot ability or using selflessness to protect either of the other ships, and, you know, what Will coined the Strezra, that Ezra Bridger sheathapede with R3A2 and Snapshot and Hera crew. Really powerful stress control ship that has pretty good defense as well. And your expertise, quick draw, and push the limit Inquisitor really don't like all those stress tokens provided from that Strezra and Lorik with the tactician.
Yeah, it's actually really terrifying because even if this Ezra can get a single shot off with R3A2, if my Inquisitor's already taken a stress token from Push the Limit, that's going to put a second stress there. So I have to be really careful about using that Push the Limit, which is kind of a catch-22 because I also need to use the Push the Limit to get a lot of my defensive modification. So this is a really tough matchup. It swung kind of both ways. Early on, Will took a big advantage there. I wasn't able to push out really any damage that I wanted to. And I took down to one hull on my Inquisitor. It swung back a little bit in my favor when my ships were able to break free. And it basically came down to the second to last turn. I took a shot on his Ezra. Nobody had taken any points yet. I deal a crit on Ezra, which triggers a harpoon, which kills my Inquisitor, which triggers the Inquisitor's harpoon, which kills the Ezra in return. At this point, he's killed 34 points. I've only killed 22. We go to the time. Last round, I take a shot on Miranda, and Miranda is left standing with just a single hole. So it's about as close as you can get for a Swiss round 9 game.
Yeah, it sucks to be so close, but still very good run, Tim.
Thanks, Carson. Yeah, I tried my best, had a pretty good run there. I was pretty confident in my performance. Last two rounds of that last game, though, kind of knocked me out of that top cut contention, but it was still a fantastic weekend, and I had a whole lot of fun seeing people from all across the country and all across the world. A really great experience. I know the tickets were limited this year, but if you can ever get a chance to go to a Fantasy Flight World Championship, it's always been a really fun event, so I would encourage anyone who has the opportunity to take it.
Absolutely. And now let's talk about people who are better than you.
And there's a lot of them.
All right, so we have the world's top 16 list to go over. And generally, it looks pretty close to both of our predictions. You know, I thought there were going to be 8 Rebel lists, 6 Imperials, and 2 Scum. I was being a little bit more optimistic than I probably should. The real world, I probably would have subtracted 1 from both the Scum and Imperial lists, making it in the cut.
Yeah, and I had pretty similar predictions. I think we both knew that the top 16 would be weighted in the favor of the Rebel faction as it was. I was also guessing that by the time we got to the top 8, that would also be comprised of almost entirely Rebel, which was almost the case there. Top 16, we had 11 Rebel lists, 4 Imperial lists, and 1 Scum and Villainy list. And by the time they got down to top 8, it was just 1 Imperial and 1 Scum remaining.
Yeah, and really that final table is where a lot of my predictions were off. Because I really thought one of those Rebel regen bunker lists, especially with that Miranda Donnie as the regeneration platform, was going to win it all. I mean, there was 2 Rebel regen bunkers in the top 4, but neither of them made it to that final table. Also, if I were to guess what 1 Scum list made it into the cut, I would not have guessed that Aggressors would make it in.
Yeah, this was actually very surprising. Simeon Delapina took Dual Aggressors to the final table, which was a list we had both heard about beforehand, but I did not have high expectations for it at Worlds. I don't even think there were that many people flying it across all 3 days of Swiss. I only saw 1 or 2, I think.
Yeah, and we'll loop back to Simeon's list when we get to it, but let's go over those top 16 lists.
Not surprisingly, on the Rebel front, 5 of the 11 rebel lists were the regen bunker list that we've seen a lot recently.
Yeah, and Jeff Berling, Marco De Scordilli, Paul Heaver, and Jan Swirsky all opted to fly Miranda Donny as their regen platform of choice, while Nathan Eide opted to fly Corrin Horn. Otherwise, they all had Lowric and some Sheathipede.
And those regen bunker lists did really well. 2 of them were in the top 8, and then 2 more in the top 4 there. So most of them made it pretty far into the cut, which is not surprising given the effectiveness of this list. I saw it in my day 2 final match there. The regen platform, it's just so hard to push damage through. These lists are resilient in a lot of matchups, so they just often win out over the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, this was the most predominant list in the cut, which I think makes me right in saying that this is the best overall list right now. The Rebels also had a pretty strong showing of the Ghost, Fenrau, and Zebarelios lists.
Yeah, Chris Little, Josh Holt, and Mark Grauberg all opted to run that Ghost, Fen, and Zebarelios archetype, getting the 4 volleys of Twin Laser Turret there, dealing out a lot of damage. This is a very reliable list with a lot of hit points and is effective in a lot of different matchups.
We also had 1 Poe Dameron and Dash Rendar list making the cut, flown by Daniel Fiorentini.
And I actually got to see Daniel fly this list pretty early on in Swiss on Thursday when I was doing that Gold Squadron podcast live stream. He was facing off against Ryan Farmer from Minox Squadron, and it was a pretty interesting match to run. I think Dash does have a lot of value right now if you're able to get matchups where he has a pilot skill advantage. And even on his own, he's just pretty resilient to damage.
Yeah, I feel like there's always been about 1 Dash player making the cut since his release. If you can dodge his bad matchups, Dash is just such a powerful ship.
Another Rebel list that we saw in the top 16 there was a Rebel Bomber build using Captain Nim, Ezra Bridger, and Crimson Specialist, the BSF-17 bomber, who can drop bombs anywhere touching its base.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy to see one of these lists make the cut, because this is one of my sleeper lists for the Rebels. That Crimson Specialist, you know, utilizing just such a full range of bombing threat potential, pilot ability, plus that trajectory simulator bomb launching shenanigans. Of course, you also have a Captain Nim who can double down on that trajectory simulation.
Yeah, shout out to Ryan Staniszewski for taking that one into the top 8. That was pretty cool to see a BSF-17 bomber make it there. Another ship really not on my radar.
Yeah, and the last list of the Rebels to make the cut was a Selfless Rebels build flown by Charles Holcomb. This featured, of course, a Lowric, Captain Rex, and Jess Pava, and also one of those Strezras that are so popular in all the other lists. So you have the control effect of Ezra Bridger with R3-A2, and of course Lowric's got a tactician there for extra stress control. Pair that with all the defensive bonuses of Lowric, Captain Rex, Jess Pava rerolls, and even Ezra Bridger defense. Really tough list.
The Selfless Rebels archetype's kind of fallen a little bit out of favor since the Biggs Darklighter nerf, but here we can see by it breaking into that top 16 cut, it's still got a lot of potential. Any kind of damage resilience is great. Lowric in pretty much any list is going to be a powerful force.
Oh yeah, this list is really good.
So that covers the Rebels for us. We also had 4 Imperial lists. 3 of those lists fell into the Palpatine Aces archetype.
Yeah, all of them were flying Captain Yor with Palpatine. Alexander Burt and Jelte DeBoer both flew Quick Draw and the Inquisitor as their aces, whereas Duncan Howard flew Countess Riod and the Inquisitor.
And it was definitely a wise choice to take Captain Yor instead of just a baseline Omicron group pilot. You're paying a few extra points, but that pilot ability to take the stress from your other ships is so valuable, especially when you're dealing with a lot of stress effects out there, like Tactician on Lowric or that R3-A2 card on Ezra.
We also had a Darth Vader, Quick Draw, and a Rogue Squadron flown by Keenan Childs. This one was pretty similar to what you flew, except getting a more expensive row and opting to take Vader instead of the Inquisitor, going for a more higher pilot skill advantage.
Yeah, and pilot skill is really important right now, especially when you're dealing with a lot of these ships coming in around 8. Miranda Donny's in particular, it's very nice to be able to slot in just above them in pilot skill. And this list is going to be a really strong Imperial list here. You don't have that Palpatine backup to compensate for some volatile defense there, but the repositioning potential and the spike damage from Quick Draw is also very powerful, and having that Rogue Squadron there to deal out some extra damage, while not being the best target priority, is a pretty good balancing point.
All right, and then on to the lone scum and villainy player to make it into the top 16, and he went all the way to the final table and won it all. Simeon Della Pina.
Yeah, it was super cool to see this 18-year-old guy from the UK take this whole world championship here, especially with a list that was definitely not on our radar. We were not predicting this list to do nearly as well as it did taking the whole event here. Simeon's list is 100 points with IG-88B and IG-88C in the Aggressor. Both of them are equipped with Push the Limit, Advanced Sensors, Ion Cannon, Tractor Beam, Rigged Cargo Chute, Auto Thrusters, and the IG-2000 title, with IGC also carrying Ion Bombs.
Yeah, so this is a full control list hitting you with Ion Cannons or Tractor Beams, whichever are going to be best suited for that current turn.
And this list runs one of the more unconventional X-Ring strategies where you're really not using that primary weapon on the IGs all that often. You're focusing mostly on these control effects to try and either guide ships off the board, ruin their action efficiency, or prevent them from shooting.
Right, you're really only using your primary attacks on those high hit point ships that just aren't worth your time to completely lock out. Ships like the Lambda Shuttle, where you just need to burn it down quickly. But, you know, on ships like Quick Draw or Miranda Donny, you really want to lock them out with a combination of tractor beams or ion cannons.
Yeah, these ships are packed with all kinds of control effects. The tractor beam and ion cannon, using both of those aggressor cannon slots, having access to those tools is really threatening to a lot of different ships, especially since we're seeing so many small base ships in the top of the metagame right now. I can say for certain, either tractor beam or ion cannon is terrifying for my Inquisitor if, after several shots from those cannons, I don't necessarily have enough defensive tokens to avoid them all. So I'm either going to get tractor beamed or, even worse, ioned while I'm stressed, losing actions the next turn.
Right. You know, if you stress yourself, then Simeon can opt to fire those ion cannons at you. And if those connect, you're just doing white maneuvers from there on out. You're not ever going to get an action again because you're not going to clear that stress token. He's just going to keep hitting you with ion cannons turn after turn until your ship is dead or flown off the board. And, you know, even if you don't stress yourself, he does have those rigged cargo chutes to set up that initial stress token that you're just never going to clear. And, you know, sometimes you might clear it, and that's what that ion bomb is there for, to set up that ion train again. That's kind of your sort of insurance policy, that ion there.
Well, and what's really terrifying for even the more high agility ships in the game with these tractor beams and ion cannons is that Simeon's going to be able to leverage that IG-88B pilot ability, where after you miss with an attack, you can perform an attack with one of your equipped cannon upgrades. And this ability is, of course, shared with IG-88C thanks to the IG-2000 title card.
Yeah, that dual cannon attack from each of those ships, just a very strong way to fire. To me, though, the strongest aspect of this list is not its control effects or its offense, it's that defensive capability. Each of those ships is probably going to have a focus and an evade token turn after turn, as well as using that boost action with advanced sensors to really make it hard to keep firing arc on these ships.
Yeah, there's a lot of great effect synergies here to look at. The Corvette coming from the advanced sensor system upgrade, where you can perform actions before you move as opposed to after, in combination with Push the Limit, where you can perform an action before you move, push the limit to take a second action, receive the stress, and then clear it with one of the IG-88's many green maneuvers.
Oh, yeah, and then it's also got auto thruster.
Yeah, and that's never bad. Well, and the preemptive boost gives it some crazy repositioning options there, because you're going to get some really good action economy anyway. IG-88C ability, which, of course, is shared with IG-88B thanks to that IG-2000 title. After you perform a boost, you get an evade token. So you're going to be able to get defensive actions no matter what you do on those preemptive boosts. And they just allow you to end up in so many crazy different places. The IG-88s have access to 4K turns as well as 3 S-loops in either direction, which means with a preemptive boost, it's really difficult for your opponent to predict exactly where your ship's going to end up.
Right, and so you're taking that boost plus evade almost every turn just because it's so good. I mean, if you're not boosting, you're probably just taking that evade action plus the focus action, because unless you need to really force damage through, just a single focus is going to be much better for your damage modification. But if you know you're not going to be taking any shots, then you can double down on target lock and focus, do one of your many green maneuvers, and still be ready for a advanced sensors boost the following turn.
And these ships are just so resilient to damage, having access to that focus and evade pretty much every turn, plus auto thrusters. I think that was one of the main issues that Jelte faced when he was flying his Imperials against Simeon in that final table. It was just so difficult to make that damage go through when you have an evade token there, adding an evade. You've got auto thrusters on range. It's hard for those, even the 3 or 4 dice attacks, to put any damage through on these aggressors.
Well, and it didn't help that Jeltes quick draw just could not get three hit results on his attacks, even with target lock. But Simeon did a very good job of just not giving opponent any opportunity to take his ships down. Always had the full power of those defensive modifications ready every turn, because he's playing the long game with those ships, so he can't risk any major damage going through on those ships.
And I think this is a very skill-intensive list here. That's the reason why you don't see a lot of different people flying it, is it takes a lot of practice, and I'm sure Simeon got a lot of practice in with this list prior to the World Championships here. And it really shows, because he took that all the way to the final table, kind of an outlier. Nobody was expecting this list to be not only the scum and villainy list to break into top 16, but the one to take the whole event.
Yeah, so congratulations to Simeon Delapina, our world champion from the UK, and big congratulations to all of our top 16 players. Huge accomplishment.
Yeah, this is kind of a big moment in history, the last first edition X-Wing World Championship, so I think this is going to be one people remember for a long time. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the podcast, please go on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please head on over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, along with a written review saying what you like about the podcast. Those written reviews are really important and helpful for new people trying to figure out what X-Wing podcasts they want to listen to. And we really appreciate everyone who's left us a review.
This week, we want to give a shout out to Andrew Cox, who left a review saying that the show helped him be more conscious of how his abilities and upgrades interacted and complement one another, and just overall helped him win more. So thank you, Andrew Cox.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. And a huge thank you again to everyone who's left us a review on iTunes. We really do appreciate that.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.